Today on the Grave Talks, we continue our conversation about the haunts of Richmond with Chris and Beth Houlihan. And I saw that you've got an event coming up. I think it was in May. I saw an event on your Facebook page or somewhere.
Oh, yes. The John Marshall.
Yeah.
The next John Marshall tour is actually on the 16th.
But you do that on a pretty regular basis then?
We take a couple of months in the summer, a couple in August, September, and then sometimes a few in the winter as well. The John Marshall House likes to do their own walks in October, and we let them do that.
Well, they can make some good money.
Exactly. It's basically a fundraiser for them, so we just let them have that, no problem. But, you know, we try to just promote them as much as we possibly can to help them achieve what they're trying to do educational-wise, and also bring the paranormal information out there as well.
And another place I wanted to ask you about, because when I looked it up, I found the most interesting story, is the Virginia State Capitol. And the first story that I clicked on, the first thing was a quote from the Richmond Dispatch in 1870. And it was, "The mass of human beings who were in attendance were sent mingled with the bricks, mortar, splinters, beams, iron bars, desks, and chairs to the floor of the House of Delegates." And I'm like, what the heck happened? Over 50 souls were launched into eternity.
And it was actually 60.
62 was the actual final count.
You know, because they wrote differently back in the 1860s. You wouldn't say, you know, when people die, you wouldn't say they were launched into eternity today. But I just found that to be so unexpected.
Very jarring.
Yeah. And it said in a newspaper. Horrible calamity. So what happened there?
So this was April 27th of 1870. Richmond has finally been allowed back into the Union, and we're allowed to have our first mayoral election. And we have two candidates. We have George Calhoun, who's the guy basically he's basically the Yankee who's been in town running things. And then we have Henry Elston, who is the local guy running to be mayor. They have so much support on either side that both of them basically end up having mini armies here in town. And we're still recovering from being burned from 1865. Oh. So to have all these lovely battles breaking out around town in support of whichever mayor you wanted to support, it's not a good thing for Richmond. And this ends up working its way up to the Supreme Court, which is housed in the top floor of our Capitol at that point in time. Now, when the Capitol was built, as Chris will tell you as a structural engineer, they built it wrong. They took out some support beams for aesthetic reasons.
Oh,
yeah. So the architect was Thomas Jefferson. He was the architect, but Thomas Jefferson was effectively absent throughout the course of construction, too busy being Secretary of State at that point in time. So that left his plans in the hands of others who decided to effectively take artistic liberties. They decided to leave out some critical support areas and whatnot. And this is something that, instead of drawing any kind of alarm over the years and decades that followed, became just a quirky, adorable piece of the nature of the Virginia State Capitol.
Never mind that it was an entire foot between the wall and the center of the floor that had dropped.
Yeah. The intensely sagging floors and stuff like that. People just thought it was, a cute fluke, if you will. But that came to a head during that case in 1870, after decades of neglect and having not been built right in the first place. They packed that room to the hilt, and
everybody stood up, because in come the Supreme Court justices. Well, that one movement of "all rise" sent the balcony falling to that floor, and it shattered, dropping them into the House of Delegates below.
Oh, unfortunately, the House of Delegates was not in session at the time. Otherwise, it would have been even worse still. But it was pretty bad calamity. Effectively, almost the entire interior of the Capitol building just gave way all at once.
Do you think that has, over now years later, has left some imprint on that building?
Oh, absolutely. The Capitol police officers were actually friends with the former police officer. His very first night there, he had an experience in that old House of Delegates. His mentor said everything's there's always an some type of entity that shows himself every single night. They, as a collective whole, have at least 4+ filing cabinets of paranormal things that have happened that they have not been able to explain. And they actually call these files the X-Files.
Oh, but that's interesting.
Yeah, and specifically in relation to the claps, they do sometimes late at night hear the disembodied like moans of injured men and cries for help.
They'll see men walking around like they're covered in ash or gypsum dust in this case, as they would have been from that collapse. So yeah, there's a lot that happens based off of that, but there's also a lot that happens based off of just the high emotions from being a state government.
Is the building now used for anything?
It's still active state government.
Okay, so it's still used. Obviously, yeah, they had to repair it.
Yeah, they had to repair it, and the section, the oldest section of the building, has now more or less kind of been it's almost more of a museum space now, that central part of the building. The government affairs that take place, most of that is done in the two wings of the building that were added in 1903.
Or in the new rooms that are now underground when they put in our visitor center and extra meeting space.
So yeah, still a very, very active space for the state government, and also actually as a tourist attraction today as well.
I find it fascinating that as a government building, that's why I questioned it when you said they have files of paranormal reports, that I assume now it's being used as a museum or something.
Nope, still active. In fact, every time we get a new governor, the first thing the Capitol officers do is sit down and say, yes, we're haunted. Most of the time, they're not malicious. They're just a little tricksy every now and then.
Yeah, it is active government space, but there is museum space there now as well. So it is more than now just the state government building. They do have that museum space for the public to go in and visit as well.
And I'm assuming you've been in there at some point, Beth.
Yes.
So
this is actually one of the buildings that it doesn't bother me to walk around.
I was going to ask, how do you feel when you're in there?
I feel the years of emotions that have been laid down in that space, but it's nothing in an angry way to me. It's more of like, things need to be done. I got to get things done, that sort of feeling. The governor's mansion, I've also been in once. That's a different space altogether. There is somebody there who's definitely saying, this is my space, you're not welcome sometimes. But on the grounds, I love being out there. It's actually one of the best places to go look at like the full moons.
I found that so interesting when I just typed it in Google and I found that story. I wasn't ready for that.
Yeah, and it's actually a Hollywood set as well. Lincoln was filmed there, as was Dave. Parts of Dave, anyway.
Yeah, they will sometimes use the Virginia State Capitol as a stand-in for
United States Capitol.
Which is really kind of, I think it is kind of odd, because we do not have a dome like the U.S. Capitol. But they use it all the same. It's a government building with the columns, so I guess they figure it's close enough.
Hey, they can generate anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Truth and Lies was here, too.
Oh, yeah.
I forgot about that one.
Yep. They, Virginia and Richmond has been a big filming location in recent years.
Now, I'm going to ask you both the same question. So on your ghost tours, do each of you have a favorite location that you like to talk about? And I'll start with Beth. Is there a place or two that you really get a feeling from, or you just really enjoy the history of it, or for some reason just kind of speaks to you?
I'm going to say it's probably the Altria Theater for me, which is on our Creepy Tales on Campus tour. The Altria Theater has been around since 1928. I'm originally a theater trained technician, and I was a teacher for many years. Whenever I go into that location just to watch a show or for whatever reason, I know there's other people there with me that are not of this plane. And I've actually been shoved by one of them as well because I was in his space and he didn't care for that. But that building has always called to me.
But I do find that so many theaters are haunted. And I think, you know, because I write, so I'm in a theater a lot, working on plays all the time. And you're connected to that space. You know, you especially, you know, if you have a certain theater that maybe you're, even if you could be the projectionist, but very connected. You might be a patron and it's your favorite place to sit. And you walk in one night and it's like, get out of my seat. This is my seat.
Yes.
So, I mean, there's just all kinds of different entities that could be there. And I especially with your history with the theater, I think that would be really interesting for you.
Yeah, we actually got to see the play That Goes Wrong a few years ago. And then immediately after the show, we gave the cast a tour and they all wanted to go back and sleep in the theater that night to see what would happen.
And did they?
As far as I know, they did not, but they were all keeping their eyes open for the week-long run that they were there hoping something would happen.
They had very cozy rooms at our 5-star hotel.
Yes, they did.
So I think that was definitely more of a joke than anything else, because if I had a room at the Jefferson for the night, I would not be missing out on that.
Yeah. Well, and considering the show itself, I'm like, how would you guys know if something went wrong? Because your play goes wrong every 5 seconds.
It does.
They're like, okay, good point.
Well, and it sounds like to me, too, any hotel that's called the Jefferson might also have its own set of characters that live there.
It does.
Absolutely. Quite the haunted location. It was built back in 1895 by Richmond industrialist Louis Ginter. He was quite the gentleman in his own right, and it was one of his the last major projects he took on before his own passing. But the building is absolutely immaculate. It's gorgeous inside and out. There are a number of spirits that linger on there. Some of them we think are just there because who doesn't want to, you know,
spend their afterlife in a five diamond, you know, hotel?
Yep. So there are some that may be associated with a unfortunate major fire that happened there in 1944, where 6 people lost their lives, unfortunately. So we think at least one of the spirits that people see around there is related to that. But yes, quite the collection of entities there at the Jefferson.
Okay, you guys, I just looked at pictures of it. That
Isn't
is
it gorgeous?
Amazing. When did you say that was built?
1895.
Wow. It was not what I was expecting. I was expecting kind of a large rectangular building. This is not it.
Oh, no. It's absolutely
it's like
gorgeous.
It
they actually used to keep
tower.
Alligators.
Yep. So one thing I do want to emphasize to anybody who might listen to this is that if you go to the Jefferson, do not ask for a haunted room. There, it's a thing in Richmond that a lot of our institutions of old don't necessarily like to talk about or embrace their haunted legacy. So the people that work there today are not going to entertain any requests along those lines. All of the stories that we have about the Jefferson come from people that used to work there and are now more or less free to talk about it, or guests that had their own experiences as well.
But that's pretty common. There's a lot of places the same. You know, they just don't want to be known for being the haunted hotel. Because especially when you look at the pictures, it's gorgeous.
The other thing, too, is they also don't want to anger anything that might be there.
That makes sense. That makes sense to me. Now, Chris, do you have any locations in Richmond that you particularly like on your tours?
So, as Beth mentioned already, I am a actual civil structural engineer by trade. So that's my day job. I really love the spooky stuff, but I do have a day job. And I think, well, Because of that, I have an affinity for cool infrastructure and stuff like that. And that actually leads my favorite story to be one that is not about the beautiful architecture that we have here in town, but it's actually about an old train tunnel here that's almost right under our house here where we live. It collapsed back in 1925 in a rather cataclysmic event. They were working on renovating the tunnel, and you know, basically everything went wrong that could go wrong all at once on October 2nd, 1925. Tunnel collapses, four men lose their lives. It's the kind of event that, you know, would have had everybody in the community buzzing. And the thing, kind of unique thing about the story that comes out of this, the one that we share on our tours, is not that it's there are certainly ghost stories associated with it, but the main story that's associated with it is the legend of the Richmond Vampire.
Oh, I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah, yeah. Almost nobody does. Nobody expects the Richmond Vampire.
No.
But what we think happened is that in the aftermath of the collapse, one of the individuals who ultimately passed away, his name was
Ben Mosby.
Ben Mosby. He was a fireman on the steam engine, was badly injured. He did manage to get out of the wreckage, but passed away later that night. He gets buried at Hollywood Cemetery here in Richmond. And we think that what happened is that people who saw Ben's rather grotesque injuries kind of eventually over time game a telephone, and they took liberties with it, and somebody ultimately winds up describing Ben as looking like a vampire, somebody with broken teeth, sharp broken teeth, blood on his face, that kind of thing.
Again, Nosferatu, the original, had just come out, so vampires were on everybody's brain.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So the story is that this vampire is seen at the entrance to the tunnel. In the midst of the calamity of all this going on, people proceed to hunt the vampire, chase him to Hollywood Cemetery, where he's seen running into a crypt. And then, you know, they can't get into the crypt because the door slams shut. They can't get in. And it winds up sparking this actual, like, long string of would-be vampire hunters that over the decades since then, countless people have been trying to break into this crypt to hunt the Richmond Vampire. So we try to make sure, emphasize the fact that it's an urban legend. We do not encourage people to hunt the Richmond Vampire because we don't want people breaking into crypts at Hollywood Cemetery.
Not a good idea.
Not a good idea, but plenty of people are doing it anyways. it did get so bad that the crypt over there, it was the crypt of a William Waltham Poole, a little bit of an eccentric individual himself during his own life. And we think that even though he's not really directly related to Ben Mosby in any way, shape, or form, that this eccentricity about him and the fact that people were kind of talking about him as well, he was just a convenient target to get woven into this vampire story that ultimately came out of the collapse there. Kind of one of those things, you take a whole bunch of ingredients, throw them into the metaphorical blender, and eventually out pops the Richmond Vampire.
The metaphorical blender. Yeah, that's true. That's good. That's a good way to say that. Now, on your tours, do you do tours regularly, or do you need to set them up in advance? Are they more private tours?
We actually offer tours just about every single day.
Okay.
We set the schedule usually in our high season for Thursday through Sunday. And then Monday through Wednesday, we make it available that all of them are there. But whoever books the first pair of tickets, that's the tour that ends up going that night. And then we'll do private tours anytime that we're available or a guide is available to do them as well.
And the pub crawl, those tours would be really fun too.
They are a lot of fun. Because of the admittedly, like, the complexity of trying to set them up here in Richmond, we do just offer them as private tours right now. Mm-hmm. Because it's the bars and restaurants here in Richmond, we don't have a lot of spaces that have I guess you could say, the wide open space where a tour can just easily roll in and find a place to.
Yeah, that's not always good.
Yeah. So we, when we do them, we offer them again on a private basis. And that way it gives us the opportunity to, you know, kind of do some groundwork, talk to the restaurants and bars and make sure that we're all squared away so that our guests are getting a good experience and we're not inconveniencing our bar and restaurant partners.
Yeah, because I think a lot of us have been on a pub crawl ghost tour or whatever kind of pub crawl thing you're doing. But I did a ghost tour once and we're supposed to be going into these bars, but they didn't have it set up well in advance. And so it's like, well, they're kind of busy right now. So
yeah,
we're going to keep on going down the street to the next one. Well, they're kind of busy. And so it ended up, I think we ended up in one or two places, but it was so loud also that you really couldn't hear the stories.
Right. And that's exactly what we try to avoid. Yeah. I mean, we do love offering those events. We try to focus more on the quality of the event than anything else. And if we can't offer a good quality pub crawl, well, we're just not going to do it. It's not how we like to do things.
But I do think it would be fun to organize a group of friends, you know, if you're traveling to Richmond.
Yes.
And do one of these. I think it would be so much fun.
Yeah. And I also will emphasize that when I say that, I'm not trying to discourage anybody from, you know, reaching out to us about doing a private pub crawl. It's just that we don't offer them on a regular basis. And when you reach out, we'll have a little bit of legwork to do to see who's available to work with us on any given night.
Uh-huh. And a lot of times our clients like to choose what we call a pick-up drop-off option, where they meet us at one pub, then we'll do a ghost tour in between, and then we drop them off at another pub.
Oh, that would be fun too. See, now you guys have given me a new place that I need to add to my list that would I would love to go vacation. I think Richmond would be so interesting. It'd be fun to do a live episode, wouldn't it? Or maybe not live, but like live on location episode. I just think that would be so much fun.
Yeah, I mean, we've started kind of doing like mini versions of those in the last year. Mm-hmm. We jumped on, you know, finally jumped on the TikTok bandwagon. Mm-hmm. So we have our TikTok page, and when we travel, we'll usually try to do a little video short about something paranormal in the area and share a short story or something. And where applicable, also give a shout out to the other small local
tour companies
that are operating in the area as well.
Now, the best place to get information, I'm going to guess, is the website, because the website's quite comprehensive.
Yes. And actually, it's brand new. We own that site. Yeah. If you're looking at it right now, the site that you're looking at is, has only been up for about 5 days.
Oh, brand new. Yeah,
we finally brought it into the 2020s.
Yes. The site that we were working off of was the
early 2000s.
The backbone of it was a good 15 years old, and it was overdue for a revamp. And so we finally revamped it and got a nice, shiny, new, spooky new site out there. And it has all kinds of information about the tours, and has a few blog posts, which we are looking forward to being able to add to those.
And our links to our social media.
Yeah, links to social media as well. So all kinds of stuff there at hauntsofrichmond.com.
And I will also put a link in the show notes so people can just click on that as well.
Thank you.
But Chris and Beth, thank you so much for talking about Richmond today. It's very interesting. I can't wait to come visit sometime.
Absolutely. Our pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for having us. Again, we love talking about Richmond. So we're so glad to be able to talk to you. And when you do get the opportunity to come on out this way, drop us a line. We'll be happy to get you out on a tour.
I would love that. And that wraps up our conversation about the Haunts of Richmond with Chris and Beth Houlihan. For more information on their tours, visit their website, hauntsofrichmond.com. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advance episodes, everything commercial free, then become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts, where you can try it for 3 days free, or you could also sign up at patreon.com/thegravetalks. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us here at The Grave Talks, thank you so much for listening.